Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, hello. Welcome to another Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. Hope you're well. I wasn't going to do a podcast this week because it's interlull, you know? Don't normally Arsecast regular during an interlull, but, you know, the week that's in it, when nothing happened. And it's the nothing happening, of course, that's the thing, because it was transfer deadline day. It was Tuesday, it was 6 o'clock. We had the chance to boost our squad. And what happened? Nothing. Yes, that's what it takes, a beer, just to sort of get into the mood of this particular thing. I was a little bit lucky because I had Tuesday afternoon. We were doing the live blog, as always, on Arseblog News, hoping against hope that something might happen. I think we knew deep down in our hearts that it wouldn't. And then about 3 o'clock, I got this huge distraction, which I'll tell you about a little bit later. Towards the end of the show, I'll tell you about that, where I just couldn't look at anything. I didn't know if anything was happening, and I didn't get caught up in that final few hours of craziness and madness and everything else. And at 6 o'clock, the window closed, and that was it. From an Arsenal point of view, no money was spent other than the £10 million on Petr Cech. So I decided, yeah, we probably better have a chat about that and the consequences of that, of course. And today we discover, out of the blue, an announcement on the Arsenal website. Danny Welbeck, out of action for a period of months. Months, which could be 3, it could be 6, could be 5, who knows? It's a period of months. And that's obviously hugely disappointing, because while everybody wanted us to sign a striker, there was at least a vague understanding of, well, you know, we've got Giroud, and we bought Welbeck last season for £16 million, and at some point he's got to come back, and he is a striking option. He does give us something that perhaps Giroud doesn't, and perhaps Walcott doesn't, a little bit of a hybrid of both of them, with a bit of pace, a bit of power, etc., etc. And look, I wouldn't say that the £16 million that we spent on Danny Welbeck was the best money we ever spent, nor was it the worst money we've ever spent. He still has quite a bit to prove as an Arsenal player, but at least we had him. You know, he was there. If Giroud lost form, or didn't find form in the first place, and Walcott's struggles up top continue, at least you've got him there, and you might say, well, let's give him 5 or 6 games and see what he can actually do. Let's use this squad depth. Let's use this competition. Danny Welbeck might just blossom. Who knows? At least he was there in the absence of a signing. And then we were told that he's not. And that obviously they knew about it last week, ahead of the transfer deadline, and I completely understand why that news was kept under the radar before the deadline, because maybe we did try and buy somebody, but it doesn't make any sense to go into the market. I know, it doesn't make any sense if you go in and you've just announced that one of your strikers is, you know, banjaxed, and is likely to be banjaxed for some time. That doesn't make any sense at all. But then, neither does not buying a forward when you know that one of your strikers is going to be banjaxed and banjaxed for quite some time. So not much of it makes a huge amount of sense. So what we'll try and do is find some sense in what's going on, look at what we didn't do in the transfer market, compare it to what others did, perhaps. I don't know. Maybe that's just kind of pointless. Got to get some beer in here. But look at the squad. Because I do think there's an element of, in the clamour for transfers, you know, you overplay the negatives that we have and you don't really look at any of the positives. And there are some positives, and that this group of players in the second half of last season put together a very, very good run. Now, of course, we're worried because that doesn't look like it can be replicated at this moment in time. Four games into the new season, we have struggled. It's been a stuttering start to the season, but we'll try and explore everything between now and the end of this particular podcast. It has been put together kind of at the last minute because, as I said, I wasn't planning on doing one. But then, you know, with everything that's going on, we might as well. And look, sure, you have something to listen to on a Friday, and then everyone's happy. So there we are. So look, let's do it. Let's chat to the two guests that I've got for you this week. First up, from Arseblog News, it's Andrew Allen. Hello.
Hello there.
And from North Bank Lower, James, good evening to you, sir.
Good evening, all.
Let me start with you, James. Is the announcement that Arsenal, having failed to boost their striking options in the transfer window, the announcement of Danny Welbeck's injury, which is going to keep him out for a period of months, is that the most Arsenal thing of all time?
It's right up there, isn't it? It wasn't a surprise for me anyway, because I got wind of it probably about a week ago, actually, that he was going to have to be operated. I can see, obviously, why they've only just announced it today, because of the pandemonium it would have caused had it been announced, for example, a few days ago with the window still open, and then obviously with Arsenal not doing any business at all. Obviously it's a you know, Danny Welbeck's not a world beater. Let's not pretend that he is, but he's a very useful player with a lot of pace, and he is a threat, you know, going forward, which you know, we haven't really looked that threatening so far this season. So it's definitely a blow, yeah.
James, do you think it made any difference to what the club tried to do before the end of the window?
I know 100% that last minute they went for the Russian striker at Dynamo Moscow, Kokorin. That was a legitimate rumour. I don't know if you saw it,
yeah.
But they did try to bring him in on loan, but his club weren't having any of it because I believe he's only got a year left on his contract, so they were reluctant to do it as a loan deal, and Arsenal didn't want to buy that particular player. So they obviously did try last minute for kind of a Welbeck replacement, if you like, one with some sort of credence. I mean, he's played 30-odd times for Russia, but it did reek a bit of you know, desperate times, desperate measures, really, which is very Arsenal, as you said.
Andrew, it is kind of a desperate thing because while we do have Giroud fit, while we've got Walcott fit, while we've got Alexis fit, who could play up front feasibly, the people who were frustrated by the fact we didn't bring in a striker at least were aware that Danny Welbeck was there and was an option. And one of the worries, of course, is that injury strike and then we're left without adequate cover in certain positions. We're not quite there yet, but with Welbeck gone, it really did behoove them to move heaven and earth to try and sign somebody. If they knew last week, perhaps it was more time to get something done.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird one, isn't it, really? Because if you knew that Welbeck was out, but you also know that you can't secure a sort of A-star grade striker like Benzema, you're scratching around thinking, do we get someone who can do a bit of a job but will eventually end up on the bench? And we've bought those players before. I mean, look at Chu Young Park as an example. Mm. How much satisfaction do you get from signing a player like that who comes in with low expectations, really isn't likely to set the world alight, might fill in for a couple of Carling Cup games and come off the bench as an option, may surprise a few people, but you get no guarantees and you certainly don't expect him to kind of be a world beater. It's a complicated situation. I think from a numbers point of view, it's more of an issue. I mean, you let someone like Sonogo, who I know is hardly flavour of the month or you know, flavour of the year with Arsenal fans, go out on loan for a year to go and get some experience. But you also think, well, actually, he could have been quite useful because we do have Carling Cup games coming up. So someone like Joel Campbell is hanging around mostly because there's a squad position there which we need to fill. Is it frustrating that we haven't signed a striker? Yes. But I find it frustrating that we haven't been able to sign a really good striker. I'm not really, you know, if you take out the kind of top band strikers, I personally am not particularly interested in us signing a name for the sake of signing a name, just filling a position, because we've done it before and it's a short term fix, but it doesn't really solve anything. And Danny will be back at Christmas, hopefully, and hopefully he'll be a player who can deliver. But right now, Arsenal's biggest thing is making sure that the players that we have in the squad return to confidence and get the goals that we know that they can get. Because we've seen Walcott scoring goals and we've seen Giroud scoring goals, and obviously we know Alexis can score goals. All three of them can score goals, but we need them to play with confidence and we need them to play together well.
We might come back to what he might do to make that happen. But James, when we talk about signing a striker, and I think at the start of the transfer window, everybody wanted Arsenal to sign somebody who could improve the team straight away. So you're looking at, you know, someone of the caliber of Aguero, one of those kind of players. As the window progressed, the chances of getting that kind of player were less and less, because they just simply don't really exist or they're not available. Even Benzema, you know, the situation he was in at Real Madrid, the likelihood of him joining us from there, unless Real Madrid told him to get stuffed, were really, really slim. But what do you make of the reaction to the fact that we haven't made a signing? I saw people say that, you know, they were going to stop following the club, that it was one of the worst things that they've ever seen. But is the fact that we find it difficult as a club to sign a world-class forward, is that really one of the worst things?
No, it's not. You only need to look around the market to see that. I mean, I kept referring to Manchester United, I think, in the last few days. I mean, at the time, just before they splashed what could be €80 million on a 19-year-old kid, I was saying, I mean, look at their striking options. I mean, at the time, it was, you know, Hernandez hadn't been sold. So it was Hernandez, Rooney, James Wilson, and I guess Fellaini, who they, you know, he likes to throw up in desperate measures. You know, now you look at it, they've sold Hernandez. James Wilson is obviously not going to get that many opportunities because they're hawking him around to get him out on loan. And they've signed Marshall, who's a, you know, is a massive punt. I don't care what anyone says, a huge punt. You know, so that just shows that a club like Manchester United can't, you know, they can't go out and buy who they want. Who, you know, say sort of 5, 6, 7 years ago, they could have conceivably done that.
Yeah.
And you know, there's just too many big players now in European football that, you know, and the talent is spread so thinly that the availability of truly world-class players that you can just go out and get, you know, a few and far between. It's massively frustrating. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I would have loved it if we could have signed a player of Benzema's ilk. I think that would have been really great. You know, I also have huge concerns, as many Gooners do, about the holding midfield position. And, you know, Coquelin's come in and been a revelation, but you know, I feel like this Arsenal team with him in have lost a lot of control from midfield and being able to dictate the tempo of the game. And I'm not knocking Coquelin for that at all, but you know, that's not a particular strength of his. So I still think that is a huge area that we need to strengthen. But from what I've heard, I don't think Arsene Wenger's that concerned. I mean, he's obviously loved what he's seen from Coquelin, and I believe he feels that he can really improve him, even though he's not, you know, a spring chicken. He's kind of mid-20s now. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if maybe we see maybe Jack tried in that position in certain games when he's back to full fitness. I know Wenger's been reluctant to do so, in the past, you know, when England have played him in that role, and Wenger prefers him further forward. But with such a an almost embarrassment of riches in that part of the field, I've got a feeling that he might be utilised there. And likewise, Alexis up front, I think, you know, I initially think Arsene Wenger bought him for that reason, but tried him there a couple of times last season, which didn't really work, and he was so good playing off the left. But it really wouldn't surprise me if in certain games he's, you know, he's tried there again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, totally frustrating. But I think, as you said in your piece this morning, we have loads of options, and there's loads of players that really need to come to the fore now, like Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, Theo Walcott. They really need to take this opportunity now. But again, we're just relying on everyone staying fit, and we know that that is just a huge problem for us.
We'll come back to fitness, I think. Andrew, just Arsene Wenger, going back to Marshall, the United signed, he said that, you know, this indicates that there isn't a problem with money. It's not an issue of money in the market, because English clubs in particular, as we know, are flush from new deals. Arsenal clearly have money to spend that wasn't spent. So he said it's not a question of money, it's a question of availability. And is that particular signing, United signing, a guy, I think there was a stat going around this morning that he's only completed 90 minutes 8 times. So when you're paying 50 million euros, whatever that might be in pounds sterling, is probably 300 pounds the way the euro is at the moment. But, but you know, it's a lot of millions for a guy of such inexperience. Do we look at that and say, okay, well, that's mental? Or do we have to say, that's the market, and if we want to do things, we've just got to get involved?
I think Manchester United went batshit crazy, to be honest. And it sounds like they tripled their offer for the player in the space of a week, because they were so incredibly desperate, because I think they've really played a bad hand over the course of the transfer market. That being said, I think this is very kind of similar to this time last year. And it wasn't strikers who were the issue last year. It was central defenders. Mm. And Thomas Vermaelen was the guy that Manchester United wanted, and Barcelona ended up getting him. And we were willing to sell a player who, let's be honest, was far from being at the top of his game. But there was a dearth of players, and there was plenty of money around, and there was plenty of interest amongst clubs for players who, quite honestly, were able to, you know, basically quote terms to teams.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds really weird, but I mean, what I don't understand is why Karim Benzema was at no point linked with Manchester United, because I don't want to sound weird about this, but Manchester United, quite frankly, are a bigger team than Arsenal financially. They are able to dictate, you know, much bigger kind of prices to brands and stuff, and they have more money. So you look at that, and you look at that player, and you think, okay, is it just a relationship with Arsene Wenger, the French connection, all the rest of it? But the other thing is that, you know, if Real Madrid are going to sell a striker of Karim Benzema's stature, surely they're looking to buy someone in his place. And there isn't really anybody out there who's better than Benzema to go and replace Benzema.
So you kind of saying that the Benzema was never really on the market or on the agenda?
I think Arsenal were definitely sniffing around him, but I'm almost certain that that was dependent on Real Madrid finding someone else, as was very much the case with a lot of deals. I mean, you know, obviously the Ozil Bale thing was all tied up together a few years ago. It just feels like there probably wasn't the access to the very top level players. Now, don't get me wrong, I think that's in the striking department. I think we really should have done something in the defensive midfield department. I think there was a real opportunity to bring greater strength in depth to that part of the team, because the likes of Schneiderlin were obviously available. And I think he was a player who we were very much in for in January before the Coquelin development took place. Mm. And let's be frank, I mean, as much as I like Arteta, and I think he brings a sense of calm and a different element to the centre of midfield, he's really only around for another year. Flamini's only around for another year. Someone like Schneiderlin, who in his mid to late 20s is going to be around for 4 or 5 years and seems to really have a grip on what life is like in the Premier League, would have been an exceptional purchase, I think. And there were others like him. I mean, we saw Kondogbia play against us, who I think has moved to Inter Milan, I'm not sure. A guy who I thought really kind of had it in him to go to the next level. Mm. So it seems strange, really, that we didn't develop on that side. But striking-wise, I mean, look, United got desperate and they threw a whole load of money and they're taking a massive gamble. And I think Arsenal thought, that's not a gamble I need to take. I'd rather sit on that money and play, you know, play with it later.
Mm. James, is a defensive midfield player, as much as everyone would like to see a strengthen there, is that the difference between this Arsenal team winning the title and not? Particularly in the light of Arsene Wenger talking about how the thing that he wants most from this team is more goals. He knows that they've got to score more goals. So he's looking for more from Oxlade-Chamberlain, more from Walcott, more from Ozil. Is the defensive midfield, is strengthening there, is that what it would take?
I believe so. I mean, I think one of the reasons why we're not scoring, you know, as many goals as we're kind of used to is because we are unable to control games like we used to from midfield. You know, I agree with Andrew. I'm a massive Arteta fan, but I mean, you only need to look at the photo shoots from training sessions to see. I mean, he had tape on both legs the other day. I don't know if you noticed. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like the bionic man. And so I can't imagine that he's, you know, he's really going to be able to be relied upon. I hope I'm wrong because I'm a big fan, but. You know, even beyond this season, it's highly unlikely that he'll be around next season. You know, Flamini, they would have been happy to get rid of this season, I think. But at least one of those deals, I think, to Galatasaray fell through for whatever reason.
Messer wouldn't let him go.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to rely on Flamini either. Although I honestly don't think he's as bad as some make out. But,
no, I agree, but.
And then at the same time, Coquelin's just it's just unfortunate circumstances in a way, because I can't see this Arsenal team winning the league or challenging, you know, really challenging for it with him as our holding midfield player, unless Arsenal can find some sort of blend that gets Ramsey into the centre of midfield, because you're wasting so much talent with him on the right, although he does the job very well, which is a kind of a mark of his profession and professionalism and athleticism. But you need to get Ramsey back in the middle. But at the same time, you can't really play Ramsey and Coquelin, because, again, neither of them can really dictate the tempo of a game. So it's a bit of a catch-22 situation. And I totally agree. I actually thought that getting a real quality defensive midfield player was more important than a centre forward throughout the summer. So for me, that's a big oversight. I'm just hoping that you know, Wenger isn't naive. Don't care what Gary Neville says, he really isn't. But I just hope that he has really thought this one through, and you know, it isn't a massive issue, because knowing Arsenal, they're not going to buy in January. Not a big player anyway, I wouldn't have thought. You know, might be a Gabriel type signing if they can find someone. But as we know, you know, there's just not that many quality talent available out there. So
yeah, well, yeah, maybe that kind of addition would have been more gettable than a world class striker. Like a very good central midfielder. I mean, I don't think any of the names that people have thrown about have been what you would call world class. I think Schneiderlin's a good player, but I don't think he's, you know, top quality.
Well, neither do I. And he's, I mean, what ended that kind of interest was not only the emergence of Coquelin, because like Andrew said previously, we were hugely in for him in January. Mm. But I think, you know, the emergence of Coquelin and also the players' demands in terms of wages and everything else that comes with that were just kind of, you know, Arsenal weren't willing to go to those lengths and make him one of the top earners of the club.
Mm. Andrew, how much of the frustration with what happened in this transfer window could be tallied with Arsenal's fairly legendary secrecy in the market, that people think, well, we didn't do anything because we don't hear so many rumours, or because things don't become public, that there's people equate that with inaction. And for all we know, a lot went on behind the scenes. I'm just throwing it out there. Maybe there was a lot going on. I mean, as James has said, there was late moves, late loan moves going on, and you can't help but think that that's probably not the only one. So that kind of tends to colour the perception of what's happened this transfer window.
Mm. Well, I mean, the fact is, if we'd signed Petr Cech on deadline day, after a summer of not signing anybody, you'd probably be feeling pretty good about life. The fact is, these things are just, you know, I think it needs a couple of weeks to settle down for us to start winning games, for us to start scoring some goals, and the pressure will be off. The circumstances in which we built up to the deadline day were such that without any goals in the team, the obvious headlines were going to be about whether or not we were going to sign a striker. There are goals in this team. We know that. We've seen the number of goals that these players have scored before. And it's inevitable when you look at the likes of Cazorla, Chamberlain. I mean, obviously, Welbeck's injured, but Ozil as well. You know, guys who have the quality in the final third to definitely score more. So I agree with Wenger. There is more goals in the current squad. Yes, we could have added more, you know, goals from another player, potentially. But I mean,
is it going to take a change of system? I mean, I think we saw maybe signs of it against Newcastle that he was willing to tinker with things. He put Walcott in, Giroud all before the game. There was all the talk about how many goals he'd scored against Newcastle since he arrived. I think he scored 8 or 10 goals against Newcastle. But Walcott was in as centre forward. I mean, that seems to me the best way to try and spark the team is to shift things around a little bit.
I think so. Yeah, I completely agree. We need to find a better way to set ourselves up. Now, look, the Newcastle game is a weird example in that, you know, there we were set up to counter a team who were attacking at home, and they go down to 10 men, and we end up, you know, you're not going to substitute Theo Walcott after 25 minutes just because the opposition have had their, you know, team reduced to 10 men. So I don't think it's a great example, but I definitely feel like we could go back to having, you know, I think it would be worthwhile trying a 4-4-2 situation at some point. I definitely would like to see Walcott playing. I would like to see Oxlade-Chamberlain on the same side at the same time. I'd like to maybe see Alexis alongside those two as well. I mean, there's plenty of options. I just think also we're just having a bit of a mental block. I mean, all the stats show that we've had more shots than anybody. We've had and created more chances than anybody. So the ball will start to go in the net at some point. It can't continue to kind of, you know,
be like that. James, what do you make of Oxlade-Chamberlain in the sense that, you know, he strikes me as the guy on whom a lot of Arsene Wenger's hopes rest for this improvement from within, the internal solutions, as he always talks about. But he's struggled a little bit in the two games that he started.
Who's that? Sorry, Walcott?
No, Oxlade-Chamberlain.
Sorry, Oxlade-Chamberlain. Yeah, it's quite surprising, actually, because he was electric in pre-season, wasn't he? And also, obviously, the Charity Shield, he was, you know, arguably our best player and scored a great goal. So, yeah, but very disappointing. The thing with Oxlade-Chamberlain is that he is either on it or he isn't. You know, he's not. He doesn't have many in-between games, does he? So, I think he's a bit of a risky selection, and I even think Wenger feels that as well, because you hardly ever see Alexis and Oxlade-Chamberlain start in the same lineup. So I think there's a school of thought that perhaps there is that element of, you know, if they're not on their game and they're not really having a barnstormer, that they're going to lose possession and obviously affect the way that we can try and dictate the play. But there are so many sort of signs that there really is an awesome player there. He is so Arsenal, isn't he? Because he's such a frustrating player, because you know how good he can be, yet you just don't see enough of it. So I think, I mean, this season really has to be a breakthrough season for him if he can stay fit. That is the big thing with Oxlade-Chamberlain, again, is that just injuries have hampered him. You know, when he's starting to find his feet and get a run of games in the team, he's picked up a, you know, an injury, and it's, again, it's really frustrating. So if he can stay fit, then, and he can start to put the performances in, as we know he can play, then he's going to be a vital part of the team, I think.
Andrew, very quickly before your battery runs out, what percentage are you on now?
Still sitting at 5%.
Still sitting at 5%. My laptop does that, and then it goes like, plug it in or it's going to explode. But anyway, I can't remember the question. Oh, yeah. Could it be a case that in the absence of Welbeck, that when the door opens, sometimes we see a player come in and take a chance? Hector Bellerin, for example. Francis Coquelin, as we've spoken about. Could Joel Campbell be the guy? Could he make an impact?
I mean, it's asking a lot, isn't it? I'm not even sure if Joel Campbell would say yes to that answer, to that question. I think it's more likely that we'll just muddle through with the guys that we've got. I mean, in fairness, last year we managed to survive without Giroud, and Welbeck, when he came into the side, was kind of feeling his way to, you know, to form. Mm. And old Alexis ended up carrying us for a while. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up relying on Mr. Sanchez again. Mm. And we shift Theo back out to the right. We just see how things work. But you never know. I mean, players know now that Welbeck is out. They know that they have to step up and fill the void between them. Wenger knows that he has to find a way to cope with that. And in fairness, it's not like he's just got injured. I mean, he's been out since April, so we survived the entire tail end of last season without Welbeck. It's just really a case of Olivier and Theo finding their scoring boots. And as I said before, you know, those are guys who've hit 20 goals in a season before, so we know that they can do it. I'm not pessimistic at the moment. I think we have enough to keep us in touch with the leaders. But I really kind of, I worry about how quickly the season could kind of fall into Manchester City's lap. I mean, they've got so many options. Yeah. And that really is the thing. I mean, from our opponent's point of view, they're the one team right now who look like they're going to just run away with it. Mm. Chelsea, Liverpool, Manchester United are going to go through a kind of state of flux for a little while, a bit of soul searching on Chelsea's part. We just need to hang on in there and just hope that we can to pick up some momentum, because it's all about momentum, isn't it? I mean, yeah, you get a couple of wins, you get a couple of goals, get a couple of players in form, and the next 2-3 months sail and you're just, you know, you're on a high. That's what we need.
James, how are you feeling in general about the squad? I mean, leaving aside what we didn't do, do you feel happy enough with what we've got? I mean, for me, I have to say, before the deadline came, you know, I looked at the squad. I think it's probably the best squad we've had in quite a while. I mean, I think there's you can always look at a team or a group of players and think it can be improved to a certain extent. But in general, it felt to me a fairly positive squad. So is the negative vibe based on A, not doing anything in the transfer market, B, losing at home on the opening day of the season, and that's kind of snowballed a little bit, and we've lost sight of what this squad is good at, or the positive side of what it does?
It's easily the best Arsenal squad since, I'd say, 2007-08, in my opinion. I think when we signed Cech, when was that now? Probably early June or whenever it was. There was a feel-good factor, you know, around. There wasn't as much animosity or negativity or pessimism. Mm. But I just think because of we haven't been able to build on that, because of the reasons we've gone into, it's and obviously the slow start to the season again, not quite as bad as the start to last season, but you know we kind of promised and we have the ability to especially with the pre-season performances to feel like we could just blow teams away. Didn't have a particularly difficult first few games of the season on paper, especially West Ham at home, and I think that set the tone. I mean, it was just such a terrible, terrible performance from everyone, and that really did kind of set the doubts again on what really should be a positive start to the season because of the strength of the squad, and also because as you rightly said, there's a lot of teams in and amongst us that are kind of really going through the motions as well, not even nearly as stable squads that we have. And I think if you look at each squad, even Chelsea's, you know, the desperate measures they went to on the last day of the transfer window, bringing in those two centre-halves. Okay, they loaned one of them back to Reading. But I mean, that, again, that reeked of desperation after they were caught in John Stones for the whole of the summer. So, you know, even the champions, I mean, you look at the start they made to the season, and if you look through their squad, it only takes a few injuries to key players for them. And fucking hell, they're due some injuries, aren't they, Chelsea? They get away with it.
They're due the fucking plague, not just injuries.
Well, yeah, absolutely. so hopefully they'll have a taste of what we've had for the last, what seems, you know, last decade of bad luck with injuries. And I really think
they've got no doctors now, have they, Sammy?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I really think we've got a squad to challenge, but then you look at Man City and, you know, you'd have to be crazy not, you know, to back anyone other than Manchester City to win it this year.
Yeah. Well, look, we'll see what happens. The next three Premier League fixtures for Arsenal: Stoke City at home, Chelsea away, Tottenham away, and yeah. You got to hope that we come through those in reasonable shape, because otherwise it could all get a bit crazy. But look, we can touch on that in the weeks to come. James from We Are the North Bank, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Cheers.
Andrew Allen, thanks as always.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. Good to be back.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Thanks to the fellas for the chat and the look at where we are, what we did, what we didn't do, etc., etc. Well, we'll see. As I said at the end there, those three fixtures coming up are testing, you would have to say. And maybe we'll get a better measure of where we are, what we can do after those. We could be feeling very happy indeed with the right results, or glummer than glum itself. But we'll keep fingers crossed and we can look at those games as and when they turn up. You can follow the guys if you want on Twitter. James at Northbank Lower, Andrew Allen at A Allen Sports. So that's really about it for this week's Arsecast, this sort of last minute thing that we're doing. I've got no beer left. It's empty. Gonna have to go get another one, because, you know, I think we all deserve one. I'll drink one on your behalf. There will be an Arsecast Extra on Monday. Myself and James will be here, who knows what, talking about stuff and things, and obviously answering some of the questions that come to us on Twitter. And the thing that I mentioned at the start of the show, the big distraction that I got on Tuesday, which took me away from the Deadline Day live blog, which Andrew very kindly had to finish all on his own. There was a lot going on, so he was up to his eyes, but thank you to him for doing that. But I was taken away from Deadline Day madness by something pretty cool. Now, if you like podcasts, if you listen to podcasts, you've probably heard of a guy called Mark Maron. He does a show called WTF Pod from his house in LA. He interviews actors and actresses and singers and musicians and directors and all kinds of famous people from Hollywood and beyond. And of course, he had President Barack Obama in his house at the start of this summer, an episode that got millions of downloads and kind of thrust podcasting into the mainstream a little bit. For people who'd never really heard of it or what it is. So he was in Dublin for a show on Wednesday, his stand-up comedy show, which was very, very funny. We went to that. But I've been trying to get him on my other podcast, a podcast I do, which is kind of more of an interview show. And after much wrangling, it happened. And so that's what I did on Tuesday afternoon. I interviewed Mark Maron for my podcast. If you want to hear it, if you want to hear about how it all came together, the way it all came together, check out the podcast at castaway.media/738am. That's castaway.media/738am. You can hear me explain how it happened, and then you can hear me interview Mark Maron, like he's the fucking master of it. So it was all a bit intimidating and scary and weird, but I think it went well. And if you like podcasts, I think you'll like this. So I hope you do anyway. The address again, castaway.media/738am. Right. I'll be back on Monday with an Arscast Extra with James. And then another Arscast next week when football kicks in again after this whole interlo thing. So thanks for listening as always. I'll catch you on the next one. Cheers. Bye-bye.
Hey Arson, Stan here. Just wanted to give you a quick call about that whole spending thing, you know. Man, you have made life difficult for me this time around. The AGM is in October, and how the hell am I going to get that $3 million in services? I mean, services. Can you imagine that they bought that last time? But look, when you spend $35 million on a Lexus and $10 million here, $16 million there, they get cranky, but they don't get cronky. You know what I'm saying? There's no distraction, so they're going to be on me like flies on shit. And man, that is on you. That's on you, Arson. Are you telling me the man who spent actual, real cash money on Andre Santos and Park Chu-young couldn't find anyone to waste some money on so it takes the heat off me when I take my services money? It's not good enough, man. It's just fucking not good enough. Keep it up. I'm going to put another one of my kids on the board. You fucking watch. Tell Ivan I said hi.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.